FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome. You are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, and today is 7/17/20. Well, election's coming up, November. My next guest believes that it's going to be a red November, regardless who wins. Red if Trump wins, meaning red for Republicans, or red if Biden wins, meaning red for socialists. And I'd like to know your opinion. Why don't you email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Well, person who's you're about to hear from, it's Joel B. Pollack. I haven't spoken with Joel in a long time, but Joel, it's great to have you back here. You just written a new book, and we're going to be talking about that. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much for having me.
Yeah, so Red November. It's going to be a Red November no matter who wins, right?
Exactly. Well, of course, red being color traditionally of socialism, but for the last 20 years, people have associated red with Republican for red states. I actually talked about the origins of that in my book. It started with Tim Russert in the 2000 election, where Democrats had previously been red for the most part, and that flipped over. So now Republicans are red and Democrats are blue. I'm not sure if there's anything nefarious there, but
it was
an interesting change. Yeah.
There definitely is something nefarious, and hey, I'm a conspiracy theorist. That's what people might refer to me as. But the reason why they switched it, and I remembered it at the time, was that red is associated with communism, and the Democrats were the red party. And because they were getting more and more left, they didn't like being called the Red Party. And they became the Blue Party, which had traditionally been the Republican Party. And the Republicans are so stupid, the party of stupid, that they went along with it. And they allowed the Democrats to rebrand because, you know, the Democrats going further and further left didn't want to be associated with red, symbolic of communism. That's the way I remember it. Maybe I have it wrong.
Yeah, I think it definitely helps Democrats not to be associated with communism, but they're certainly doing their best to associate themselves with socialism in the 2020 election. And that's what Red November is about. It's about the most left-wing primary in American presidential history. And it has produced the most left-wing candidate. People think about Joe Biden as kind of a glad-handing, backslapping politician. He's been a liberal, however, for much of his 50 years on the political scene. Not a socialist, but he's moved towards socialism in his pronouncements, his policies. Bernie Sanders just today was taking credit for moving Biden to the left. He keeps moving to the left, and there's not much that distinguishes him anymore from Bernie Sanders. And he's out there talking about things like revolutionary institutional changes and systemic racism and fundamentally transforming America. These are things Sanders used to say on the campaign trail. They're now part of the Biden stump speech.
Well, so I have an interesting theory about Bernie Sanders in both elections in 16 and 20. I don't buy that this guy ever wanted to be president. I don't buy that he was ever a real candidate. I think he's kind of like your old grandfather who likes to complain about the fact that the roof is leaking and the house is a mess, but he doesn't want to do anything about it. All he is a complainer. And the reason I say he was never serious was because he never took political advantage of his Democratic adversaries. For instance, he's up there on the stage with Hillary Clinton, and they ask him a question about her email server, and he says, "Enough of the damn email server. I don't want to talk about that." And hey, when you don't attack your opponent's weaknesses, even when they're on the same side as you, and you can do it in a diplomatic kind of way, then, in my opinion, you're not serious. And then in this election, he doesn't attack Biden's corruption, his corrupt family that has lined their pockets, compliments of the U.S. government, the U.S. taxpayer, and all the overseas kickbacks and bribes he's gotten and his family's gotten. And he doesn't ever mention Biden's cognitive failing, the fact that the guy appears to be in getting into an advanced stage of dementia. He doesn't go for any of this. That's not the sign of a guy, Joel, who really wants to win the election, is it?
No, I mean, I think he wants to perform as well as he can. I mean, I'm sure, you know, anyone who's in the race wants to win. The question is, do they think they can win? What's motivating them to run? And when Biden's been asked about what motivates him to run, he cites Trump's comments after Charlottesville, Virginia, the riots there. He misquotes Trump. So it's basically a lie. I don't know what's motivating Biden to run. I do know that the party is motivated to get behind him, not just because they dislike Trump, but because they didn't want an out-and-out socialist like Bernie Sanders to take control of the party. I think it's not even that they thought Bernie would lose, because they're adopting all of Bernie Sanders' policies. They just didn't want someone who was a non-Democrat to control the Democratic Party. And I think Biden's become a vehicle for the Democratic establishment to reassert itself, but also the campaign, which is not controlled by Biden, has become a way to move up through the ranks if you're on the left and get your policies in there. So the Democratic Party is essentially being run by a mixture of old establishment party hands, but young new ideologues. And it's interesting. I mean, it's a very powerful combination. I don't know if it wins this election, but it's going to be with us for a long time.
Yeah, I have a feeling you're correct, and I do agree on your analysis of it. But Bernie, always thought like Hillary put him up there in 16. They wanted him there so that she would look more centrist. He would be the contrast to her, because she didn't believe a leftist could win, and she was such a bad candidate. Bernie woke up one day and said, I could win this thing. I can't believe it. He was kind of like OJ when the jury came in and acquitted him. Like, wow, you know, who would have ever thought? And he was as shocked as anybody else. And then, of course, the establishment circled the wagons, just like they did around Biden, with all of these candidates conveniently dropping out right before the primaries, except Elizabeth Warren, who split enough of the vote so that Biden wound up winning Super Tuesday, and the rest is history. But hey, we're here now. Don't you think with all the rioting, the civil unrest, the pandemic and everything else, people are kind of fed up with these blue state governors and blue state policies? I mean, I'd never heard Biden come out and deplore the rioters, you know.
Right. So I think those are two different questions. I mean, the question of whether people are fed up with the governors, you know, the opinion polls tell us that blue state voters are very much in favor right now of their blue state governors. But I think that's also a product of media bias. I mean, there's nobody who's done worse than Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York. He sent coronavirus infected patients into nursing homes, a policy that critics say may have caused the death of thousands of people unnecessarily. And yet he has opinion poll ratings up near 80%, whereas other governors like Ron DeSantis in Florida, who did not do that and protected nursing homes, had opinion poll ratings hovering around 60%, which is still pretty good. But if you just compare what the two governors did, there's no difference. The difference is in how they were portrayed by the media. And the media are constantly beating up on Ron DeSantis because he's a Republican. And they're constantly defending and standing up for and covering up for Andrew Cuomo because he's a Democrat. I don't know that people are sick necessarily of blue state governors. I do know people are sick of the situation we're in. And I don't know how that comes out in November, to be honest, because if you believe the polls, and I think people should be quite skeptical of polls, but basically voters are fed up with everybody. And I'm not sure it's unique. I'm also not sure it's permanent. I do think that they see Trump being very active and trying a bunch of different things to get the economy going again, to solve the coronavirus problems. You know, he spoke very early on about accelerating the development of vaccines. Now we're seeing some vaccines possibly coming online. So if that starts to succeed, I think you see a big shift. But again, I wouldn't place too much store in polls or what people think of their governors, that sort of thing. We've got a different situation right now where the choice facing voters is what kind of country we want to be. Do we want to be a socialist country, which is really on the ballot with the Biden campaign? Or do we want to be a country that is free, that has to deal with emergencies from time to time, as every country does, but that is going to pull out of it by using the same freedom approach, by depending on the same liberty that made us prosperous and that has enabled us to overcome in the past?
And I think the rioting has made people say, do we want the party that supports the riots, or do we want the party that's against the riots? And because every night there's a riot in Portland, Oregon, in Seattle, in all of these blue cities. And I think in 68, if we go back that far, Nixon became president. He was elected based on the silent majority, largely due to all the civil unrest that was taking place in the country.
Yeah, you know, I don't know if it's exactly the same. I mean, you're right that there's a pattern in our history of this. I think what makes it difficult to say with certainty that this is a repeat of 68 is the fact that Nixon wasn't an incumbent. He was running and he was out of office. Lyndon Johnson was a president, but he wasn't running for re-election. So if you had to, it was an open seat. They were comparing the Democrats who were basically on the side of the protesters and versus Nixon. And Nixon got the nod. But the other thing is that there was also a third party candidate who didn't really have much of an effect on the race, but George Wallace took away some Democratic votes. So I think your point is a good one. Whenever there's been disorder, Republicans have tended to do better, at least when it's a law and order question. I think Democrats are gambling that they can create enough chaos and blame it on Trump that voters decide they simply want something new and they're going to choose to go with Democrats just because they're the alternative. That's a very risky proposition, and of course they're gambling with the country's future. But we'll see. I think you could be right, and certainly Biden has tried to soft pedal any sort of criticism he might have had of the Black Lives Matter movement and its destruction. And he's trying to say he doesn't support defunding the police, just redirecting funds and that sort of thing, which is all just nonsense.
Yeah. Now, in your book, Red November, you talk about the deep state revolt. And that is something I find fascinating because up until recently, many of you out there never even knew there was a deep state. So first, Joel, what is the deep state? And second, what is their agenda?
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next.
Silver One Resources is an exploration and development company backed by strategic investors Eric Sprott and SSR Mining. At Silver One's Candelaria Mine project in Nevada, there is already a historic resource estimated at 127 million ounces of silver, which Silver One is developing and advancing. The company's Phoenix Silver Project, located within the Arizona Silver Belt, is an early-stage exploration project on which native silver vein fragments have been discovered near surface. One grab sample assayed an astounding 14,688 ounces per ton. Yes, that's right, ounces, not grams. Silver One has tremendous exploration potential, is extremely leveraged to the price of silver, and is cashed up and poised to increase shareholder value. Silver One trades in New York under the ticker SLVRF and in Toronto under the ticker SVE. To learn more, go to silverone.com. That's silverone.com.
The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Well, the deep state refers to those members of the government who are there essentially permanently, and they are usually members of the intelligence and law enforcement community, maybe Justice Department, IRS, various agencies, and they basically govern the country no matter who's president. Now, theoretically, they're accountable to the legislature, and theoretically, they work for the president, or they report to the president, but it's been a source of resistance to the president, and the deep state has basically cooperated with Democrats and the media in leaking whatever they could to embarrass the president and trying to trap the president in crimes or trap his associates in crimes that could be used to push him out of power. And it's really one of the most disturbing things that's ever happened in our country, that the outgoing administration, the Obama administration, conspired with elements of the deep state to spy on Trump's political campaign, and then to prosecute Michael Flynn, his incoming national security advisor, when they knew he had done nothing wrong. So it's really the beginning of the resistance is in this deep state. And I talk about that and how they encouraged opposition to Trump, not just ordinary opposition, but radical opposition. And that's how we got to the point of Red November. We had a situation from the beginning of this presidency where Trump has never really been allowed to govern. And the fact that he's done as well as he had and achieved as much as he has against that kind of opposition is pretty extraordinary.
Yeah. And the deep state, I would also add to that, there's also a component from the private sector, all of these contractors to the CIA, to the FBI, to federal government contractors, the military industrial complex, parts of them, for instance, guys like Fusion GPS, definitely part of the deep state. They're a contractor. So, yeah, in spite of all that opposition, spying, being a Russian agent, supposedly, purportedly, I mean, that is just absurd on its face. Everything up against him, and he still managed to beat them. And what does that say about Trump?
Well, I can tell you one thing we know about Trump. We can't know, you know, in advance how the election is going to turn out. But one thing I think we know is that he works really hard and he is determined to win. I mean, he's made some changes at the top of his campaign now. I don't know enough about the internal workings of a campaign to know whether those personnel changes are good or not. What it does tell me is that he's engaged in trying to win, that he's working things out. If things aren't seeming to go well, he's going to try to win. He's not going to just sit back and let things happen. He's really determined to make the changes necessary to be competitive and to win. So I think that seeing the president, the leader of the country, work as hard as, if not harder than, everybody else in his administration or in his campaign tells you something about how he is going to be a leader in the next 4 years. I mean, I think it's encouraging. Whenever you've worked for a boss who's at the office before you and leaves after you, you know, it does make you work harder and it does make you confident in the leadership of the organization.
Yep, I totally agree with you. Having had my own business and being the first one to get in, or among the first in the morning and always the last person to leave, it shows a sense of commitment and dedication. And shows that the boss isn't afraid to roll up his sleeves and really do the work, get things done. And that's Trump. Trump has always been that way.
Yeah, absolutely.
So going back to your book, and what was the main goal in writing the book here? What made you write it?
Well, I was really interested, you know, as a former Democrat myself. I mean, I was very much on the left when I was in college. I really wanted to understand the direction the Democratic Party is moving in. I think it's unhealthy to have an opposition party that's determined to overthrow the government. I mean, not just to replace it, but to change the form of government. You know, John Locke wrote in the Second Treatise of Government that when you change the form of government without the consent of the people, then the people have a right to overthrow their government. And for some reason, we're in that situation. The Democrats are running, as Joe Biden says, to rip out the roots of systemic racism, whatever that means. He's talking about revolutionary institutional changes, whatever those are. But basically, they intend to come into power and slam the door behind them. They're going to get rid of the Senate filibuster. They're going to add D.C. as a state. They're going to add justices to the Supreme Court and pack them with their own liberal choices. They're going to do all of these things that make it impossible for Republicans ever to win again. They're going to pass amnesty for 11 million illegal aliens, turn them into voters overnight. I mean, these are radical, revolutionary changes that will basically make the Republican Party a permanent minority. Democrats want to turn America into California, and California is not working out too well. So I think we're at that point, and I'm concerned about it. And I think we'd like to see a more responsible opposition. And so I really wanted to get in there and find out why this is happening to the Democratic Party and to be a firsthand witness. And I was the only conservative journalist who covered the primary wire to wire. I mean, I was there in the beginning, right through to the end when they closed things down because of coronavirus. And I think you get that perspective. It's not at all serious and, you know, dark and grim stuff. I mean, there's some very funny moments in there, you know, when, like, you know, Julian Castro is demanding the right to abortion for transgender women. In other words, for biological men who identify as women, they don't have uteruses, but they can have abortions.
Yeah, well, there's no difference between the sexes. Don't you know that, Joel? You know, men, women, they're just the same. And right. You can decide what sex you're going to be. And if you're on Facebook, you got 50 different sexes, genders, I should say, including peanut butter, and makes total sense to me. And so really, up until the coronavirus hit, it looked like Trump was on his way, you know, basically just going to march right in, win the second term, regardless what the vitriol was. But then we had the coronavirus, then we had the social unrest, and we still have the coronavirus and the shutdowns and everything else. Is it a game changer? Has anybody changed their mind to not vote for Trump or to vote for him because of what's happened?
Well, I don't know. If you look at the polls, and again, you have to be skeptical of polls, there's been remarkable consistency. The Wall Street Journal NBC poll has shown that Trump is consistently between 40 and 44%, and Biden is consistently between 49 and 52%. And that's been unchanged for a year. So if you think of all the ups and downs, the impeachment, coronavirus, the rioting, all of that, it's just unchanged. Hasn't shaken anyone's opinion of anything. The only thing that's changed is people's view of where the country's heading. And more people now think it's on the wrong track. That's usually a bad sign for an incumbent. But we don't know. I mean, we just don't know. What I do know is that the Biden campaign has done something which I think is potentially a catastrophic mistake for Democrats, and it's definitely an opportunity for Trump, which is that they're running against the country. They're running against its history. They're running to change symbols. You know, Biden's not really speaking out against any of this. Pelosi is actually condoning the removal of statues by violence. And so Democrats are associated with this defund the police stuff. They're not speaking out very vociferously against it, at least. And, you know, in some cases, they're pushing it. So I think Democrats have taken a left-wing approach to this election. And Biden is not really the alternative to that. He's cheerleading it. So I think it's a mistake. I mean, if I were running a campaign, I would say, listen, let's just stick to the middle. You know, if the country is really being run badly, people will come to Biden regardless. Why do we need to go over the deep end? Why do we need to go over the edge with Sanders? But they're going far left.
Yeah, and this defund the police, like a lot of Democrats who might not even be that fond of the police, understand that that getting rid of the police is invitation to anarchy. And then you have Chaz/Chop, and you watch what happened there with no cops for a couple of weeks, and they're killing each other and crime is running rampant. You know, we get back to that situation again of what do the Democrats stand for? Defunding the police is a total act of insanity, because we're seeing, even with the police kind of in defensive mode in the country's major cities, shootings, murders, criminal activity just explode, mostly, almost exclusively in blue cities. And I think you think that's having an impact on what people perceive here?
I do. I think it's definitely changed some minds. I think there are some Democrats who are thinking twice, who think, you know what, I don't want this. I'm not a fan of Trump, but I definitely don't want to defund the police. I definitely don't want chaos and disorder. And look, the country wants stability, but Biden is offering revolution. And I think a lot of Democrats are not on board for revolution. Maybe the left-wingers, the college kids, you know, the Black Lives Matter movement, but the suburban Democrats, probably not so much.
Yeah, the country wants steak, and Biden's offering chopped liver. So, yeah, it's kind of frightening, too. I mean, I don't know if you've been in New York lately or in other cities, but the whole vibe of the place has changed, and it's really, we need a wake-up call here, some type of revival. I don't know what it's going to be, but if you want people read your book, what is the one takeaway you want them to have from it?
Well, I think it's all in the title, that this election is really about the choice to go down a socialist path or not. Red November, and the Democrats definitely have put socialism on the ballot. And if people want to understand how that happened and what it means, they should read the book. Again, it's entertaining. There's some funny bits along the trail. This is one of the zanier primaries we've had. But it's also, I think, quite sobering. And I lay out there what the two alternatives are for America's future.
And you've written a lot of books. And I should have mentioned your association with Breitbart.com. So you carry a lot of weight in these circles. And I'm certainly paying attention to what you have to say, as well as reading the book. I'm kind of in the middle of it now. And yeah, some of the stories of Schiff's basement and the whole impeachment farce. I mean, it really was a farce. They knew they were never going to impeach him. What do you think the real purpose of that impeachment was?
Well, the real purpose was to tarnish the president as having been, you know, the third president ever impeached. It was never about removing him from office. They knew they couldn't do that. They just wanted to tarnish him. They were interfering in the election, so to speak. They were abusing their power. And they were hoping to dig up as much dirt as they possibly could. They knew he hadn't done anything impeachable. They also knew there weren't the votes in the Senate to remove him from office. But they just wanted to tarnish him. And I think it caused a lot of damage to our country. Because, of course, in the 20 days of the impeachment trial, from late January to early February, That's when the coronavirus arrived. The coronavirus arrived in the country on January 15th, the same day that Nancy Pelosi, with all her golden pens, signed the articles of impeachment. You know, I write about that, you know, in Red November. But imagine if we had spent 20 days working as a country together to deal with that threat, rather than watching this ridiculous show trial in the Senate while the disease spread. And the House of Representatives, controlled by Democrats, did nothing about coronavirus until the day Trump was acquitted, until February 5th. That tells you the cost to our country.
Yeah, really, really out and out criminal, you know, to score political points, put the country through that, distract the country from what turned out to be a major disaster. I mean, can debate the shutdowns and all that, but a lot of people have died from it, and maybe more could have been done if we had acted together as a country instead of being so divided here. And so you got another book planned for the aftermath of the election, I hope?
Yes, I am working on something. But you'll find out more about that later.
All right. I understand. You got to hold something back here. So I guess we find the book. The book, again, is Red November. Will the Country Vote Red for Trump or Red for Socialism? By Joel B. Pollack, who's on with us now. You find it at Amazon, wherever fine books used to be sold, right?
Yes, sir.
All right. Hey, any questions for Joel? Why don't you write us, kl@kerrylutz.com. Go to the website, sign up for free newsletter, financialsurvivalnetwork.com. Joel, it's great catching up with you, and great luck on the book.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.